So hi, everyone, and welcome to the 32nd episode of the Language Mandarins podcast. My name is Jonathan, and today my special guest is Alina Dudik from the Ukraine. She's been very active in the Language Heroes Marathon, so it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you for inviting me, and hello, everybody.
So can you tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in the Language Heroes Marathon?
Okay. I found the group of this marathon when there was no marathon at all. It was just Zhenya's blog and the group of this blog. And one day I saw an invitation to the marathon, that day, you know, I live in Lugansk, and here we sometimes have problems with electricity and so on. So I didn't have chance to join the marathon when I saw the invitation for the first time. But then there was a kind of a small challenge from Zhenya, and people who wanted to join the marathon, they had to write several articles on iTalki or Lang 8 or something like that. So I've written several articles, and Zhenya invited me. It was April, I suppose, and the start of the marathon was on the 1st of June. I was pregnant at that time, and I didn't know the exact date of my son's birthday, but there were some dates by the doctors. They told me some dates. So that's how it happened that I joined the marathon when my son was 4 days old.
Wow, okay. So this was about 2 years ago in 2014 2015, okay. Oh, okay. So the marathon, so this is still relatively new that there have been, how many seasons have there been now?
I've been to Language Heroes for 3 seasons. So the first season I've been learning Chinese, and then I was invited to become a mentor of Rare Languages Group, and now I've been mentoring for 2 seasons.
Okay. What are some changes in your experience of being a mentor and being a language learner? Do you see any differences now with your learning routine or the advice you give people?
Of course. I try to give advice which I use myself. And sometimes I say myself, well, Alina, use the advice you give to other people.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
To say something and not doing it. And being a mentor also gives a lot of inspiration. When you see the people who are mentored by you, your mentees, they make progress, they succeed. It really inspires. It gives more force to continue your own learning, to start something new. So I like being a mentor.
From my side of being an English teacher and working with students, it is very motivating to see how people are learning the language, and especially in a community environment. I find that really inspiring. I was trying to start being like a kind of assistant mentor in the winter marathon, but this whole transition that I've been going through the past month and a half or so has kind of put things a bit on hold. So unfortunately, I wasn't so active in this marathon for the winter, but I'm looking forward to for the next one. So I think that's going to be starting in June, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So there, for people who are listening, the marathon usually lasts 3 months. It's based on Brian Pomeran's 12-week year book, which basically hyper condenses the kind of productivity that you would get in a year into 3 months. And so each week symbolically is a month's worth of studying or effort. And this could be applied to many different circumstances of business, in your personal life, in this case, language learning. And so it's been applied to a very effective language learning community. So yeah, there's been, if I'm not mistaken, last summer, 2015, when you got started, and then autumn, which is when I joined and was starting to work with my Russian. And you've been doing Chinese and Arabic as well, or mostly just Chinese?
At my first marathon, I tried to learn Chinese. And at my second marathon, when I was invited to become a mentor, I decided to get back to my Arabic and to work on it. And this last marathon, I tried to somehow improve my English because it suffers. It really suffers because of other languages.
I think you're doing a good job. So, yeah, it's a pleasure to be speaking to so many different people who, as I've listened to like to the last month or so, I realize I think I've only spoken to maybe on one hand, people who are native speakers in English. I think I'm definitely in a minority. So it's really great to be able to talk to so many people from around the world who speak English so well. And I prefer listening to how other people speak English, how they use it, because it's really inspiring to see. It's not just learning how English speakers use the language. There's so many more people out there using English as a second language, foreign language. So. And how do you incorporate your study routine with a toddler at the same time?
Oh, I've been waiting for the question, of course. You know, my biggest discovery after becoming a mom is that children, they do not take your time. They give you time. They show you that you've got plenty of time, and the only thing you need to learn is how to use it. How to take it and how to use it productively. A lot of moms, of course, they complain that, well, I have so many things to do. I have to cook, I have to clean it all up, I have to wash up, I have to do some laundry, some shopping, and so on. And the baby is always with me. But in fact, a lot of moms, they spend their time not productively. They do lots of things that they don't help them at all. Searching the net, watching TV, chatting on the phone, and so on and so forth. So I just don't do some things that I don't need to do. I choose doing something useful, either doing some yoga or some language exercises, some language tasks, or maybe reading a book. So it's not that difficult. It just takes some time to get used to it. Of course, life after becoming a parent, a mother, a father, changes. It changes completely. But it's only our choice how we spend our mm-hmm. life.
I can completely relate where, I mean, my daughter right now is a year and a half, and my son is 3 years old. I do sometimes realize, okay, if I have 1 hour right now, it's very precious. I need to do something very effective with that 1 hour. Whereas I think before I had children, I had not a lot of time management skills to be able to say, oh, I have an hour, oh, I'll go sleep. or what am I going to do to this evening? Maybe I'll go out to the movies. I think I now go to the movies like once a year. It's ridiculous. But in terms of the language learning, yeah, I have to become very effective with the time management. As you say, yeah, finding moments where, like, instead of going on Facebook or some social media for an extended period of time, how about you invest that time in learning a language? Do you try to do things in 1 hour blocks? Is that possible? Or do you try to put things in 10 minutes, 15 minutes?
The second variant, of course. Well, I've found out that before having my son, I've been teaching Arabic for some years, and I used to sit, open my books, open my copy books, and spending three hours in a row for that stuff. But now I understood that having small blocks of 10, 15, 20, and so on minutes, even 5 minutes, it's really useful. It's really useful when, first of all, you do not get tired. Well, for example, you open some, I've got 10 minutes, okay, I open some of my word lists. I revise some words. Okay, this scene is done. Secondly, if I read the text, I can make a short summary. Make a short summary, put it in italki, get the correction. So this small block system, it really works. Even if you don't have 3 hours at once or even an hour at once, you can do a lot, really a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. And do you try to change those activities each day, or is it just as you see you are inspired to say, okay, now I'm going to work on vocabulary, now I'm going to write, here I'm going to speak?
I have kind of a planner, a paper where I write what I'd like to do, and plan minimum and plan maximum. I write for myself that, well, tomorrow I'd like to look at that grammar topic. And the plan minimum is just to look through some rules and to make some notes. Plan maximum is to do 2 or 3 exercises, something like that. So I just open a new unit in a book and I divide it into several parts and try to put them for each day of a week. That's how I try to do it. You know, the last marathon, the autumn season, I tried not to plan at all. I tried to do whatever comes to my mind. So, well, let's listen to some music, then let's watch a film in Arabic, maybe then let's, work on some podcast, listen to a podcast and so on. But it didn't work for me. It didn't work for me. I didn't make a progress I'd like to. I didn't level up. So this time I decided to make some schedules. And you know, they work for, first of all, I see what I've done. I see what I've done and I see what I haven't done and what I have to do the next time. So that's how it works.
And how often do you get a chance to schedule Skype chats or video audio chats with native speakers or different people?
Speaking is the hardest situation because speaking takes some... You should schedule your sessions with other people. And when you do it, you have to somehow... Well, I have to find someone to babysit.
Mm-hmm.
Not to speak on Skype or and so on. I try to... What I try to do? First of all, I try to ask somebody from my family to help me. And I try to take small, very small sessions. 10, 15, 20 minutes will just have some speaking. I also try speaking to myself and speaking to my son. And now he's listening, he has daily listening of Russian, English, Ukrainian, and some Arabic.
Wow, yeah. I try to do that a little bit with my kids where, I mean, I have to figure out some way to include a little bit of Russian practice here and there. And so I figured, well, why not while they're playing, I'm practicing speaking or... It's also kind of like a language partner, even if my daughter can't speak yet, but I can at least talk to her and practice saying phrases. Like yesterday I was taking notes on things that I would say of like, what are you doing? Or why are you doing that? Or, okay, do you want to play? Are you tired? Or, and where's her brother? Where's her mother? And just trying to put those phrases into Russian just to practice them and then take them down as notes, and then even upload them to italki, as you mentioned. If it doesn't take very long to write what my notes were, if it's like a paragraph or something, and the feedback is relatively quick. If people want to get feedback on the writing, it's really a good idea to use the italki notebook entries. So it's difficult for you to organize for the speaking to have a person to
organize speaking with a partner, mm-hmm. speaking with yourself or your child or so on, it's not that difficult. But to find a partner, it's not that easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you never know, and
as a
mother, you know where your child might, I don't know, make noise, get sick, have a problem, an interruption. And do you record yourself and upload your recordings to, let's say, YouTube or to some other social media platform for feedback, or do you just speak to yourself without recording?
It depends. It really depends on my purposes. Well, sometimes I speak for do you know such service like Duolingo or something?
Yes.
Like
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm.
When you can write a text and then read it out loud and people will listen and give some feedback. Sometimes I just send my recordings directly to my friend, a native speaker of Arabic, for example.
What kinds of things do you prefer to do for the speaking? Just spontaneous speaking? Do you like to work with a specific text? What's more effective do you see?
I like when I have the topic. I do not know how to speak spontaneously. I usually sit and do not know what should I say. I like random question generator. Do you know such service? When it generates, there are several sites when you can just, it generates for you a random question.
Oh, okay.
I also like such lists, for example, 500 topics to speak. I just choose a random number, for example, 26. Okay, 26, what's 26? My dearest person. Okay, let's speak about my dearest person. So that's how I try to entertaining myself.
What is the website for one of those random question generators? Could you just Google this and find random question generator?
Yes, it's possible. If you try, you'll see plenty of this of such sites.
Okay. Yeah, I was not aware of this. I think that's a very good idea.
It's a very good idea when you don't have a partner.
So yes.
It can become your partner and you even do not know what will he ask.
Yeah, I think that's also, you could use that for if you're going to write an italki notebook entry or a just an exercise for writing. It could also be for just speaking, or it could be a topic that you study vocabulary related to some question that let's say, okay, what's your favorite food? Well, then you have to go search for vocabulary related to food and dishes and maybe ways to say your likes and dislikes. So yeah, I think that's a really good way to integrate some kind of random element in there to keep you guessing, but also keep you focused on a topic. I think that's a good idea. What are some of your favorite resources, online websites that you use on a regular basis to find different, if it's articles or grammar sources? What do you like to use?
For Arabic, I like reading BBC Arabic. The articles there are very, not very easy, but they are very clear. Very clear, the grammar is very, like, you know, in Arabic there is such a big problem for learners. It has Fusha, so-called modern standard Arabic. Standard Arabic. And there are plenty of Arabic dialects. And when a person starts learning Arabic, he's not aware of this thing. If he's learning standard Arabic, he will face difficulties speaking to people on the streets, to listening to music and so on. He will not understand the thing. But if a person starts a dialect, he will definitely not understand the Holy Quran, or he will not understand, news on TV. They usually read in modern standard Arabic. When I was studying Arabic, I didn't know about this situation, and I learned standard Arabic. So now when I try to to go to some resources from different countries, sometimes I feel like, well, I know nothing at all. But BBC News, they are written in very clear modern standard Arabic. I would recommend anyone who's learning standard Arabic to use these articles. They're usually on up-to-date topics. They have very clear grammar structure, very popular vocabulary. So I like this resource a lot. When I want to read something in English, I usually just open Yahoo articles. They are on a very wide range of topics. Now I prefer parenting section, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But there are lots of interesting topics. When it comes to grammar, I prefer old school. I prefer books, grammar books.
And do you, but paper books that you can take out from a library or that you buy, or things like Google Books, digital PDFs, or both?
For Arabic, for Russian speakers of Arabic, there is a very good book by Хайбулин. It's called like "Краткое руководство к арабской грамматике," like short grammar learners. It's a free source. It's given by the author. It's available to download and it's available on the website. So I like this. It is also a book, a paper book. So it can be taken in any way the person wants. When it comes to English grammar, of course now I don't use grammar books, paper books. When it comes to English grammar, we can open any site and everything is available now. But with Arabic, yes, sometimes it you need to take books. Because Arabic, even though Arabic is such a popular language, I don't know why, sometimes it lacks good resources, unfortunately.
And for developing your vocabulary, what are some techniques that you use?
You know, when I joined the Language Heroes, I've discovered Memrise. I wasn't aware of such a wonderful resource for language, for your vocabulary boosting, Memrise. I also use Anki sometimes, because mm-hmm. Anki is easier. When you use Anki, it's easier to add vocabulary units there. Also, I just use very old method, writing down all the unknown words into a copy book and then looking it through time to time.
Mm-hmm. I use Memrise as well, and I try to develop some of my own courses on there for my own vocabulary. But every once in a while, I do like to just go back to pencil, paper, with a notebook, because quite often my cell phone, I run out of memory or the battery dies. But with a notebook, yeah, I mean, there isn't a battery attached with a notebook. So if you can read this whenever you have a chance and you don't have to worry about the internet connection. And I do still like the kind of old school approach with a notebook. Do you ever do distillation processes where like you take your vocabulary from one notebook and put it in another one? Do you do any kind of summary with your vocabulary?
Of course. When I read a book, for example, I write down lots of vocabulary units, but later I look them through and of course I say, well, do I need it? Do I really need it? Now I try learning only the words I will use, I'll use them later. I try not to take some bookish words or very specific words or some scientific terms. I do not use them, so they will not leave. They will just like hand like, well, I try to avoid this, learning things that I do not use at all.
Yeah, I've seen this a little bit with my Russian, where in the past marathons, I've tried to say, okay, I'm going to read the classical literature of Chekhov and trying to read so many short stories. And then I've gotten a lot of comments from people saying like, that's just, it's vocabulary that nobody uses anymore. It's outdated. And then I go to like the street slang and the way people talk on the street, and kind of like what you were saying with the dialects, with Arabic, of like, if you can't understand somebody on the street, what's the point of knowing that language if you can't communicate with people? So I've started a little bit to put the classic literature aside for a little bit, and maybe now I'm going to focus on modern articles just in the news. And I found a really good YouTube channel called Easy Russian, where they just go to talk to people on the street, and they have the subtitles, and I listened to that several times, and I'm like, and then they have them for several languages, so it's very useful to really get familiar with the way people actually speak on the street.
So this is a great resource. Easy Languages, they also have Arabic, they have Egyptian Arabic for Egypt, and I don't like Egyptian Arabic.
Okay.
It seems to me too weird, too odd sometimes, but I really like this channel. Mm-hmm. I like their approach. It's very, first of all, the videos are very beautiful, and people speaking very clear. They have subtitles in both languages, in English and in the target language. So yeah, it's a great tool. They also have some German, Spanish, and so on, so many mm-hmm. languages. Yeah, it's a wonderful tool.
What are some of your other YouTube channels that you like to watch, or are there podcasts that you like to use for Arabic?
For Arabic, there are only two podcasts, actually. Arabic Pod 101 and mm-hmm. and just Arabic Pod.
Okay.
So have a second name, Arabic in Your Pocket. They are both, I think they are both for Egyptian. Even though mm-hmm. they say that they are for standard, they have Egyptian speakers. So it's mm-hmm. Somehow they have influence, this influence, Egyptian influence on modern Arabic. Mm-hmm. As for me, they are quite, I think they are quite easy, because yesterday or some days ago, I tried to listen to the highest level, the advanced podcast. I understood everything, so I felt suspicious. Well, I'm not that good. Probably they somehow say that the level is higher, but I think it's a bit lower.
Okay. Or you are advancing. Perhaps, yeah. I realized, I think you saw this in the Facebook group I was trying to promote, with the fact that there's so many speakers from around the world trying to kind of crowdsource audio content. And one example was to take some of the basic phrases from Omniglot, things like hello, how are you, yes, no, nice to meet you, and try to get people to make those recordings in their local dialect, because Arabic is spoken in so many different countries. I'm not sure if it's as many or more than for Spanish or for the Spanish-speaking countries. I think in terms of the numbers of how many different countries, how many different regional varieties there are, it's a very high number for Arabic.
It's about 27 or something like this.
And okay.
Also, some countries, they have Arabic, they speak Arabic, but do not have it as an official language.
Okay.
So the number of speakers is 1.5 million, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not very good at numbers at all, so don't listen to me saying some numbers, but the number of speakers is huge. It's enormous.
I would just say, if somebody does want to hear numbers, a really good source to go to is Ethnologue. That's ethnologue. I think it's .com. And they've got a lot of statistical numbers about which countries use which languages and where those languages are spoken and the number of speakers, more or less. So it's a great resource to have a lot of those facts and figures, if you're the kind of person who wants those numbers. It's something that I would like to promote more in the Facebook group, since it's getting too close to maybe 9,000 people currently, almost. And there are so many people who want to learn the different languages, and they do have these difficulties, for example, with Arabic or maybe with Spanish, and to say, well, which one should I learn? And it's a difficult question to answer. I think it's useful to be familiar with many different accents, because you never know when you might have a travel opportunity, or you might have an opportunity to work with a language exchange partner from a different country. So it's usually a good opportunity to, if you can become familiar with accents and pronunciation and regional vocabulary, I never see that as a disadvantage. Maybe you can help me promote this again with getting more people to help us out with Arabic. Because as you say, if there's just two podcasts out there, then I think crowdsourcing audio is a really good way to create something that's interactive, something that would be based on what people want to learn, how to say, So that's something I would really want to continue to encourage people to take part in.
Haven't you ever thought of starting Arabic?
I have, and as you say, okay, there's the standard Arabic, and I have looked a little bit at some of the script to try to learn associate the sounds with the writing. And I did use the Facebook group to make contact with at least one person, and I was telling them, could you please give me a list of common boys' names and common girls' names and give them to me, the list in Arabic, and give me the list in English with kind of a transliteration, but don't tell me which one is which. I had to go through the list and teach myself the letters and try to figure out this is okay, this is an M, this is like an H sound, okay, there's a D sound, okay, is this Mohammed? And then I would go look online and I would check or it'd be Mohammed, and there would be so many different varieties of ways to transliterate Arabic, so sometimes
sometimes when I open Arabic books, I say that, well, each book has its system, because
wow.
I haven't yet met two books having the same system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it that I think is for people who are based on approaching Arabic through transliteration, it's going to be a little complicated, because in other languages where you say spelling may be important, and maybe the spelling might change the meaning, which is sometimes the case in English, I would tell people start to become more familiar with the way the word is written in Arabic. I mean, the Arabic spelling is what you want to learn, not necessarily the transliteration. And I see people do this as well for Chinese with the pinyin, or using the romaji with Japanese. They spend way too much time getting familiar with that transliteration system, and I think it's a crutch. You become too dependent on that. I think I also see this people learning Russian, where they try to transliterate the Russian Cyrillic, and sometimes they spend too much time on that and not enough time just learning the script, learning the different way to spell these words and learn them that native language, that target language. I would like to continue. I did a little bit of Arabic a long time ago. I didn't get very far, but I'm still stuck at the script. But I would like to get into it a little bit more. So you've given me some good resources that I'll have to take a look at. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'll be happy to, if you can help me with a few phrases, a few sentences, or point me in the right direction. That would be a language. I think I keep putting that off in the distance. I keep looking right now with this year, with my project of working on about 52 languages and doing a language per week. I've mostly been trying to stick to what I consider easy languages that might have the Latin script. One or two of them have been different, but I've been kind of with this transition and trying to figure out how is my methodology for this. So some of the bigger languages like Arabic, Chinese, I've been kind of putting them off a little bit, because it's not something you could do in 1 week. It's not something you could do in 5 minutes and say, oh, okay, I can have a conversation for 15 minutes in this language. I'm waiting after this year, maybe, to, if I have a methodology in place, or if I've spoken to so many different people that can give me so many different recommendations for resources, I'll have this really huge library of resources that I should take a look at. So thank you for the recommendations for Arabic.
You're welcome.
And what about for your Chinese? How advanced are you in Chinese?
Well, now I feel like I've lost everything I had. Well, but in fact, I only managed to make a trial HSK1. You know, it's like A1 in Chinese, this test. Actually, it's a very easy test because it tests only 150 characters. But if to speak about having some conversation in Chinese, it's not that easy. I think I've been working for my Chinese for 12 weeks. I've learned only really some survival phrases like hi. I'm from Ukraine, my name is Alina, I have a son, I'm 25, and probably that's all. How to get somewhere, and that's it. Because Chinese, first of all, it takes too long time to learn how to sound, not maybe right, but how to produce some sounds that native speakers will understand. I've noticed that Chinese speakers, they don't try to, like, to listen very attentively to what you're saying and helping you to produce the right sound. They say, what? Well, I don't understand. So sometimes it's quite disappointing for me. So it takes really much time to sound right. And then the second very difficult thing in Chinese is writing. When you learn a character, it's just one syllable, and one word can consist of several syllables. So it takes a lot of time training how to write and drilling all the characters, writing them a million times to remember. That's where memorize can help. And a lot of people, when they start Chinese, they have to choose whether they learn how to write or whether they don't learn how to write by hand at all. Because it really takes time. So now if you don't want to write, you can just learn words, learn phrases, learn grammar, and type the phrases. Typing in Chinese is very easy. You just write Latin letters, and it produces the Latin letters into a Chinese character, and that's it. So he has typing in Chinese, but writing in Chinese is really challenging.
And when you say with the syllables, is it that one character can have multiple pronunciations?
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So when you learn one symbol, you have to learn maybe a dozen sounds that could be associated with that character?
Not a dozen, but two, three at once.
Okay, so not as much as a dozen, okay. But there could be multiple sounds that you have to associate with that, okay. So yeah, I did do a Pimsleur Chinese several years ago to try to do things like Washu Moi Gurin, like I'm American, or I'm not sure what else, what I remember, like Zhongguo, I think is Chinese. Yeah. A really good website that I've come across is with Chris Parker with fluentinmandarin.com. He's got a lot of good resources, especially for English speakers if they're approaching Chinese. But it's interesting to get your input of people from around the world say, okay, Russian and Ukrainian, that's so difficult. And then, well, what do those people consider difficult? So do you consider Arabic more difficult than Chinese, or do you consider Chinese more difficult than Arabic?
Chinese is more difficult because Arabic has letters. It has letters, it has vowels and consonants. So, those letters take time to learn them. But once you learn them, you can read just like English or Russian or Spanish. They are letters. But in Chinese, you never can read a character if you don't know what the sound of this character. That's why Arabic is easier, in my opinion. One more thing, Arabic has the grammar of Arabic is not that difficult, I think. Sometimes it reminds me of Russian grammar, sometimes it reminds me of English grammar. And it's Arabic has a state structure of a sentence. It starts with a verb, there's a subject, and so on. Then it's some, I don't know, object. So the structure is always, almost always the same. So as for me, Chinese grammar, it seems to me more difficult than Arabic grammar.
And so how many years have you dedicated now to Arabic?
Oh, almost nine. It will be nine in September. When I came to my first Arabic class, I knew nothing, completely nothing about Arabic countries, Arabic people, Arabic language. And once a teacher came in a class, an Arab teacher from Jordan, and he started explaining us it. Well, Arabic letters, they come from right to left, and he started writing us some letters. When I saw it all, I came home, I said, Mom, I'll never go back. I cried and repeated, well, never again, never again. But you see now.
You did go back, so.
Yeah.
And repeatedly, okay. So so that's good to see dedication for languages. I would say for me, the strongest languages that I have are Spanish and French, which I started with Spanish 20 years ago and French 18 years ago. And then that just created a whole lifestyle because I lived in Paris for 6 years, and then I've been now in Mexico City for a little bit more than seven. And now my kids are growing up speaking Spanish, French, and English. So, I mean, if you spend enough time dedicated to a language, it becomes part of your life. So I have a hard time sometimes when I go back to the United States, I can only speak English. So there's like two other parts of me that just, it's like having like a painter with color on your palette and you want to paint a picture, and then somebody says, well, I'm afraid you can't use these colors. You can only use these ones. And so sometimes when I'm only allowed to speak English, I feel like I'm speaking in black and white sometimes. And there's some friends and family sometimes who they may not know different parts of my personality just because I have to interact with these languages or, and it's not something I do to show off. It's just, it's who I am now. Do you feel that sometimes that you might be thinking more in Arabic than you might be thinking in Ukrainian or in Russian?
Of course. Sometimes, sometimes you remember an interest in idiom or something like this, and you say, well, how to say it in Russian? I do not know. There's no same phrase. Yes, of course, language becomes a part of your personality. You cannot avoid it.
Yeah, I see that sometimes where, like, there's certain things that I've just experienced only in other countries. Like, I never owned a cell phone in the United States, so I've only had cell phone in France or in Mexico. So if people ask me in the States, they're like, well, what's your cell phone plan like? And I'm like, well, I have no idea how to compare. I don't really know what the plans are like in the States because I never had one. So when I'm having to talk about my plan or talk about how I use it, I feel like I have to translate the way that they describe how you use the cell phone. And people look at me like, cell phones have existed for like 16 years now. How do you not know how to talk about these plans in English? And I'm like, well, it's just, I haven't had one in the States. I'm sorry. But so sometimes you have experiences in a foreign language or you read about content in something else that has happened also if you study content at the university in the target language. Sometimes you don't know how to translate it into your native language. So that's weird. Sometimes I've seen that happen to other people who study internationally.
It happens very often for Ukrainian people when it comes to Ukrainian and Russian languages, of course, because we, at school, we had some subjects in Ukrainian, and sometimes we do not know how to translate them in Russian. And also, when you buy anything, you see some instructions in Ukrainian. Sometimes you just sit and think, well, what do they want from me? What is that? And what is that? And where to put it all? So it sometimes happens.
I've had this question with people who live in these border areas and regions that speak kind of bilingually. What are some of your challenges being bilingual in Ukrainian and Russian? Like, what are things that you would confuse, or that you would have to think twice of, like, do we say it that way, or is it, do I spell it this way, or do I say it this way? Are there things that are difficult for you, or do you feel you're completely bilingual in...
Of course I mix these languages, and everybody does it. In my family, I live in a monolingual Russian family. No one from my relatives has Ukrainian origin. But a lot of people have Ukrainian mother and Russian father, for example. And they mix languages like a salad, you know? One word Russian and one word Ukrainian, and so on.
Mm-hmm. I see that also with French and Spanish, where, I mean, because I speak those languages so frequently, I do mix sometimes. And then I realize when I was in France, my Spanish was really influenced by my French. And then now that I'm in Mexico, my French is really influenced by my Spanish. So it kind of goes back and forth, where you might introduce kind of what they say, Gallicisms, which are the French words or French syntax or grammar in Spanish. But now I'm getting them a bit more, each one is independent for that. This is another thing that I've seen with the languages. Is there a certain conversation topic that you prefer in one language to another, or you feel completely the same in both languages?
You know, I'm worked at a Ukrainian university and did a lot of papers, a lot of documents in Ukrainian. And when it comes to filling in some forms in Russian, I feel like I can fill it in Ukrainian somehow automatically. Not even seeing that, then I wouldn't see well. That's Ukrainian, not Russian. So sometimes in this sphere of documents and forms and ID in some contexts, I'm better in Ukrainian. But when it comes to some personal issues, to speaking, to chatting, to communicating with other people, of course I'm better in Russian. When I came to Western Ukrainian region, where they speak completely Ukrainian, I didn't feel that my Ukrainian is quite fluently. They all said, well, your Ukrainian is so good, but I saw that, well, no. They use some words, some colloquial words, some phrases, the accent is quite different, their intonations, they are not the same that we are taught at school. So, of course, I'm not a very good Ukrainian speaker in some colloquial moments.
Yeah, and I ask that because sometimes when I am speaking with my wife, when we have, like, really basic conversations of, like, hey, what are you going to do this weekend? Or can you pass me the salt? Or what are we going to do today? A lot of that is just going back and forth in Spanish or French or English, either one. But suddenly when we have to talk about something very serious, relationship things or family things that we have to plan and talk about, and suddenly the conversation might go to French or English. I don't really have that vocabulary in Spanish to kind of defend myself in those cases, so I have to switch to another language where I can take care of these topics in a certain way. But otherwise, it's kind of, people ask us sometimes of, like, well, you speak all three, why? And it's like, I don't know, it depends on the subject, it depends on, and I think there's people when we're at a restaurant who sit next to us and think we're just crazy because I'm speaking to the kids in English. She might be going back and forth speaking to the kids in either French or Spanish. And then my son only responds to us in Spanish. He's starting to do a little bit of French and a little bit of English, but he's primarily speaks Spanish is where he's fluent. So somebody sitting next to us at a table will be like, what is wrong with these people? So it'll be funny to see how the kids grow up and how they speak to each other, mixing the languages and how they kind of identify themselves for what is their native language. So if I asked you, what would you say is your native language?
Russian.
Russian. Yeah. It's difficult sometimes to like the identity with the language and the culture and to keep them separate.
If it comes to language, it's Russian. If it comes to nationality, I feel Ukrainian. So that's how.
Been a very pleasurable talk to get a chance to hear about the way you learn languages and your study routine and your involvement in language heroes. It's been very fascinating. Thank you very much for coming on the show. And if people would like to get in touch with you, should they contact you on like the VK platform?
Of course.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's welcome. Okay. I'm glad to speak to anyone. So.
Okay, so I'll make sure to include a link to your VK profile in the show notes. Okay, perfect. And if people are interested in taking English lessons with me or hearing more about my language meanderings, you can visit my website at Huggins International. That's HUGGINS International.com, or you can send me an email at HugginsInternational@gmail.com. Thank you very much, Alina, for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure talking to you. So I can say paka and what was it in Ukrainian? It was...
До побачення.
Thank you very much.
Thank you too. Bye.